Hello and welcome to episode number 70 of the Web 2.0 show. I'm your host, Adam Stachowiak. Today we're going to talk with Ethan Block. He is the co-founder and CEO of Flowtown. Flowtown helps you connect all of the social dots of a person from their email address, which is a pretty wild service. The company itself is under a year old, and the product itself is under 18 weeks old, and they're already making money, and good money at that, which you'll hear him talk about in the podcast. Ethan mentions at the end of the podcast they're hiring a Rails developer, because they're a Rails shop. The entire Flowtown application is built on Rails, so if you're a Rails developer, and you've even got some experience with Mongo or Couch or a NoSQL solution, give them a shout. Email them at jobs@flowtown.com. And if someone from the show or a listener of the show gets hired by Flowtown, they're going to give me an iPad to give away to a listener, which excites me. So please, if you're a Rails developer looking for a job or work for an awesome company in San Francisco, give them a shout, jobs@flowtown.com. I want to thank Grasshopper.com for sponsoring the show. We're doing something pretty cool called Pitch the Show. Pretty much if you give me a phone call at 1-888-WEB20SHOW and give me your best 90-second pitch about you and your business, me, myself, David, and C-Mac, we're going to listen to those pitches and select two businesses once per month to come on a special episode of the Web 2.0 show and get featured. We'll also have a special guest on the show that is very much known in the world of startups, so you could get exposed to some very cool people. So give me a shout, 1-888-WEB20SHOW. Give me your best 90-second pitch. I want to hear from you. I also want to thank the Web 2.0 Expo for sponsoring the show. They have an upcoming conference happening in San Francisco, May 3rd through May 6th. You should check it out. If you want to register, head to web2expo.com/SF to register. If you want 25% off your ticket, enter the web code WEBSF10BD5. That's 25% off. Or for a free expo hall pass, enter WEBSF10BDE. If you're not following me and you're not following the show on Twitter, head to twitter.com/AdamStac. That's Adam Stack. Or to follow the show, enter WEB20SHOW. That's all for now. Enjoy the show. Thanks for listening. I'm here with Ethan Block. He's the co-founder and CEO of Flowtown. Ethan, why don't you say hello to everybody?
What's up, everybody? Really appreciate you bringing me on the show, Adam. I'm really happy to be here.
And no problem. I like what you guys are doing with Flowtown, so I was excited to have a chance to discuss what you're doing in greater detail. So you've got more of a backstory to you. You didn't really start with Flowtown. Where did why don't you give everybody kind of a gist of who you are and what you're doing, kind of what you're doing at Flowtown?
Sure. So real quick, 30-second spiel. I've always, in terms of my background, I've always had three parallels, which were marketing, finance, and tech. I started my first business when I was 13, e-commerce. I used IRC to actually market my products and build a good small business for being as young as I was. You fast forward to college, I started a news network, and I hosted a show called WSYK. And when I graduated, actually ended up getting syndicated by Revision 3 out in San Francisco, which is sort of the genesis and the push for me to move to San Francisco. Once I moved there, I started working for a company called Cake Financial, doing community management, marketing, video. When they couldn't raise funding in late 08, they actually laid off a big portion of the team. I lost my job. And I met my co-founder, Dan, about a month earlier, and he was doing some really cool things with startups around marketing and metrics. And I started working with him, and I went to him one day, and I was like, Dan, there's a business to be had here. And that's sort of how we founded Flowtown. I did to sell him a little bit more and show him, what I was thinking and where the vision was and how we were going to execute and dominate. We founded Flowtown in January 2009.
And so you went to San Francisco just on a whim with
So Revision 3, I think I was getting $50 an episode they were paying me.
Wow, $50 an episode, huh?
Yeah, big dollars. It was actually the first I've ever been paid for an episode. So for me, it was a big win. And that was enough to get me out there. And I had enough savings to sort of survive for a couple of months. I got the job at Cake in the first 3 weeks of living in San Francisco. So it was all, it was all really fortunate.
It seems like you've had like this, at least when I look at your past, it seems like you kind of just stumbled into the things you've landed with. Like you had your thing with Revision 3 with WSYK, and that wasn't sort of like a stumbling into it, but it sort of, it drove you over to San Francisco, and then you sort of stumbled into
In some ways, it was a stumble. I mean, when I was still in college, I went to South by 08, and I just started my show then. And I was just out there trying to meet people that could, you know, I could add value to and that could add value to me and help me. And at the time, Damon Berger was head of biz dev at Rev3, and he was on a panel. And after the panel, I went up to him with my iPod Nano. I said, "You need this on Revision 3. I stuck it in his face, gave him an earphone, and played one of my shows. And he's like, "All right, let's talk." He gave me his card. And from that, he introduced me to Martin Sargent, who was still at Revision 3 at the time. And Martin loved my show.
Martin.
Yeah. And Marty, we're actually good friends now, which is awesome. And he sort of was my champion at Rev3 to get my show on there. And
he's crazy too. He's so, I love Marty. I'm a big fan of all his.
He's actually an amazing person, and he's brilliant in so many ways. It's you wouldn't, you know, some of the personas he plays on his web shows, you wouldn't know, but he's one smart SOB.
Oh yeah. He's, well, to be that, what's the easiest way to describe it? That, swift on your feet with good comebacks. I guess he does have very good comedic timing, but he's just so on the ball with things, and he's got a good comeback to pretty much everything. And he could be a little crude in some points, but that's just probably his overzealous personality coming through sometimes.
Yep.
So that's kind of wild. So wait, when was this in South by Southwest? What year was that?
That was South by 08. That was my first South by, and just a few people that I met there sort of sort of created the path that I've gone down now. I mean, my co-founder Dan, I met on Twitter because I met some guys that used to work for him at South by 08 that when I moved to the city, he moved a month after me. They introduced us on Twitter, and Dan and I met, and we sort of hit it off. So South by 08 was just a really integral point in sort of my past.
So let me ask you a question then on that note. How much money did you have in your pocket in 08 when you went to South by? Not how much you were earning, but why did you go there?
I went there just because I wanted to go. I mean, I'd heard about it. I missed it the year before on the dates and times. And like I somehow saw somewhere that South by was in like a month. And this was back in 08. And I just booked everything right then, threw on the credit card, didn't even care what it cost, paid almost full price of the ticket, found a place to stay. And I convinced one of my friends to come with me. And that was it.
And you met up with who did you say you met up with from Revision 3?
Damon Berger. At the time, I don't know. I'm not sure where he's at now. I don't know if he's at Current or where he's gone to. But yeah, he was at Revision 3 at the time.
And so the point I'm trying to drive home there is because there's been times in my life when I've gone to a conference thinking, man, should I go to this conference? I mean, it's around a grand. I'll spend round trip between the ticket, the costs, and you add it all together. And I'm thinking, you know, what am I going to gain from this? Am I going to learn anything from this conference? You don't go there to learn, really.
Yeah, totally.
And
to be honest, it's South by the panels. They're cool and it's great, but like that's not why you go. I'm going this year. I'm not even sure I'm going to buy a pass to go to the panels. I may just.
Well, you probably should. From what I understand, you should have a pass because you can't get into some parties because if you don't have a pass, no party.
You don't even need to know people. You can just jump fences and sneak into places. There's so many people there, like they can't keep track of everyone. Not saying I recommend doing that or that I've done that, but I've had friends.
Definitely not.
South by was integral, and I totally hear what you're saying. You know, I met three
people. So that was at the crux then. I mean, that's where if you hadn't met up with I'm sorry, I forgot his name again.
Dan Martell.
No, not Dan.
Not your co-founder. I'll really blow your mind, okay? So at the time, I wasn't doing my show WSYK. I had some other show called 60 Seconds, and that's what I showed to Damon Berger. I also met Gary Vaynerchuk at South by 08, and he was awesome back then. I mean, he was still getting some, you know, good fame, but he wasn't as big as he is today. And we sat down and talked for a bit. He gave me some insight. And from that, I created the show WSYK, which is the show Revision 3 ended up syndicating. And during that same South by, I met people that used to work with my co-founder, Dan, who introduced us on Twitter, which was the genesis for Flowtown. I mean, it all was connected. It was crucial.
That's so crazy how the story plays out like that too, because I had to reflect on how you say back then because it's 2 years ago, right?
And it is 2 years ago.
I have this little thing I say that each year is like 10 years of internet years, you know, like dogs is 1 year is 7 years of a dog's life. And I think that 1 year is like 10 years of the internet because 2 years ago, where were you at?
Yeah, for sure.
2 years, where was I at 2 years ago? And so much has changed since then. I mean, even from the landscape of the web itself, I mean, it's just crazy how the platform changes like that. But I wanted to connect the dots there on how critical South By was for you.
Yep, critical.
So then you so we went to South By. We met up with Buddy from Revision 3, and I'm crappy with names. Audience, don't get angry with me. I'm just it's one of those days that I just forget names.
It happens. But, no worries.
So what happens there? You go out to San Francisco, and you get this thing going with Revision 3, but something happens, and where did you go from there?
Yeah, Martin Sargent, he actually I finally meet him in San Francisco. He gets me my job at Cake Financial by introducing me to the CEO. From there, I meet Mike Malone and Leah Culver from Pounce, who I'm friends with now today, and I owe a lot to them for multiple things. And so I was talking to Mike last week when stuff breaks. I call him because he's just awesome.
I just talked to Leah yesterday.
Really?
I'm not friends with Leah. I just met her yesterday. We with the Changelog, we had a podcast with her yesterday to talk about, you know, she's one of the authors of OAuth, the OAuth spec. And
yep.
We had her on the show talking about her endeavors in open source and startups and stuff like that. And yeah, she was awesome.
She's great. Yeah. And then, so I was in San Francisco, and then I was introduced on Twitter to my co-founder, who is my co-founder today, Dan, a buddy, Adam of his, and who I'd met at South By. I said, "Hey Dan, you know, connect with Ethan, Ethan, connect with Dan." We connected. I think we got drinks one night and then hung out another night. And we just sort of really have this instant, I can't explain it, but we're meant to work together. We both have a lot of complementary strengths and weaknesses, and it's been amazing. I mean, I owe a lot of our success at Flowtown to Dan, and I'm sure he'd say the same thing about me, but it's incredible. It's been unreal. And yeah, I mean, we founded Flowtown in January 2009, and it's been a year, and we didn't even have a product for the first 10 months to speak of. And the product that's out there today is now 17 weeks old, and it's just killing it. It's blowing us away in regards to traction. I mean, we had revenue since day one. It's just been awesome. And we have a lot to do still. And in my opinion, the product sucks still. It's embarrassing, but it works, and it provides value. But there's still a lot more to be done, and it's really exciting.
So how do you start up an app like Flowtown? Have we properly introduced what Flowtown is? If not, let's do that first before I ask this next question.
Sure. Yeah. So on the really basic way to explain Flowtown to almost anyone is that you give Flowtown an email address, and it's going to give you their name, age, gender, occupation, location, up to 50 social networks and websites it's on, it's their influence, and then it's going to give you the tools necessary to take action on that data. So for example, you bring an email list into Flowtown, we're going to show you who your top influencers are right off the bat. You can do a more personal outreach campaign to them because, you know, there may only be 20 or 30 or 50 of them. In the same light, you can actually send an email from Flowtown and say, "Hey, I only want this email to go to people on Twitter. And why am I sending this? Because I'm going to invite them to some type of special contest or some thing that I'm running. And I don't want to send an email to my whole list. If you're not on Twitter, I don't want to bother you. But if you are on Twitter, I want to go and engage with you on a richer, deeper level." And that's pretty much what Flowtown does today. And what it does tomorrow is a whole lot more exciting. But what's cool is even what it does today provides an immense amount of value and gratification to our customers.
And so how do you take an application like that, which seems, from what you just described, pretty deep, how do you make money from day one? How did you do it?
Charge. Throw up a pricing wall.
I love it. Charge my product. Isn't that astounding in this day and age? Charge your product.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's. We've always been bootstrapped, so it wasn't ever a thing. We never had the option to say, "Hey, let's just get a lot of users and then figure out how to monetize." It was like, "Hey, let's break even so we can survive."
And there are a lot of stories about companies like yours where you bootstrap at the first point and you're forced into, you know, I say that kind of in a light way, but you're forced to charge for your product right away instead of, for example, episode 67 with Hootsuite. I met up with the CEO from them.
Ryan, very friendly with Ryan.
So, you know, in their case, they're able to put out, you know, this awesome social media dashboard called Hootsuite at no cost. I mean, they have plans to monetize, and they have plans to take it in a direction where they charge for it. But because of their success with their other businesses, they were able to, you know, foot the bill for a while and get critical mass. Yep. Whereas you guys, you had to bootstrap, so you had to charge right off the bat.
Yep.
And so what was that like then? What was the early iterations of the product?
Yeah, so the interesting thing with Flowtown, when we started the company, we did not want to create a product right off the bat because we weren't totally sure of what the problems that startups, the small businesses, the medium businesses were having. We knew they were having problems with online marketing, but we weren't exactly sure which you know, what the problems were and which sort of the same problems, like if I'm, you know, you could have a different business, but you're having the same problem as the other business, right? So what's that common watering hole of a problem that everyone was having? So when we started the company, we started off as a service business by design to really work hand in hand with these businesses to really get a feel for their workflow and these problems that they were having when it came to sort of generating new business from the internet, as well as following up with the existing customers, past customers, you know, and new leads. So we started and we basically went from 0 to 15 clients in 3 months. And as we were working with them and seeing these issues they were having, we started to build prototypes on the back end, actually software prototypes that we would use to help us manage and service that client. Now, they didn't know that we were building sort of a mini product or a prototype, but that's exactly what we were doing. And once we had 4 to 5 of these prototypes, we said, okay, there's something here that we can now blow out into a product. So around April-ish of 2009, it's about 4 months into the company, we sort of fired all of our service clients or grandfathered them in if we had done sort of a fixed contract. And we picked one of these prototypes and blew it out to a product. And the first one that we picked was a tool that would allow companies to spin up landing pages on the fly. And the reason we did that was because we noticed that a lot of businesses would buy Google AdWords traffic. They would buy traffic from elsewhere, and they would just send it to their homepage. And their homepage isn't optimized to convert or capture a lead. So, like, let's create a really simple tool that allows them to spin up landing pages so it can increase their conversion rate. Sounds simple enough. We launched the product, zero traction. We really we really underestimated the amount of education, of additional education that had to go in to get people to use the product, because, you know, they would sign up and the learning curve would just spike because they have the right copy, figure out how to position their images, understand where to put them on their site. I mean, it was a nightmare, and we didn't have the resources at Flowtown to help them do that. So very quickly, we learned that product wasn't going to work. And I say very quickly, it actually took 3 months for us to figure out, like, this is not going to work. And again, being bootstrapped, we had numbers we had to hit, so we couldn't really sit there and figure out how to make it work. So we threw it out. We actually threw out the entire code base. We threw out the entire product. And my co-founder, Dan, comes to me and he says, you know, what are you using every day at Flowtown that we built? And I was like, I use Hedwig. And I said, what are you using every day? Because I use Hedwig like 50 times a day. And Hedwig
what is
was
this? Yeah, I was gonna say, what is this?
Hedwig was a prototype we built, which is really the foundation of the discovery engine that's in Flowtown. You know, you give it an email address and it gives you a crap ton of data. Both Dan and I were using that every single day. So we're like, there's definitely a product to be had. So before we build it, let's actually go out and sell it and make sure there's enough need or enough demand. So we just put together, you know, 6 high-level mocks, worked with an interaction designer who came from Google, Chad Thornton, who's a rock star. And he helped us put together, you know, 6 high-level mocks that then I went out and sold to 20 companies based on just the idea of the product. And when we got that buy-in from the 20th customer, we built the first iteration of Flowtown in 4 weeks, and that was 17 weeks ago, roughly. It came out in the tail end of October.
And so where are you at now?
That's where the product is. The product's, you know, 17-ish weeks old. And when we launched it, it had like no functionality. It didn't really do much, but it did one thing decently well and delivered gratification. And we had a paying customer, I think, within the first 3 days of launching the app. We had a paid customer, and then we had another paid customer and another paid customer. And it's just been taking off. And we now have over 2,600 businesses using Flowtown.
Wow. Okay. What's the demographic of your customer base? Like, is it big business? Is it small business?
It's small.
Is there a sweet spot in there somewhere?
There's no sweet spot yet because we haven't tried to figure out where the sweet spot is. You know, our sort of approach was, let's just talk about the feature and function of the product and let everyone in the world in. And then what we do at Flowtown is we send a survey. Your second week of being a Flowtown user, you get a survey from us basically asking you. It's a Survey.io survey built by Kissmetrics and Heaton Shaw over there, and with help from Sean Ellis, who's a metrics-based marketer, another rock star. And we just ask them, you know, what value you're getting from Flowtown? How are you using it? And the more of that we get, we're going to figure out, you know, how we want to sort of craft and will down our messaging and sort of our marketing and the sort of product promise and benefit. But for now, we're just keeping it open and just saying, you know, come use it and then tell us how you're using it.
So let's rewind here for just a second so I make sure I got what you just said down pat. So yep. What you're telling me is 17 weeks ago, you didn't have a product. And what you did was you took an internal product that you and Dan were using to engage with the customer base so you can build Flowtown, what is Flowtown now. Yep. You went out and you looked at yourself and in your processes and said, what part of the tool do we use most? And you found out what that was, and you said, let's sell this as a standalone product. Is that kind of what you did?
That's dead on. I mean, we couldn't sell it in its current form, but we were like, let's make it a little bit beefier. And what we actually do is we created another prototype on top of that, which would have people come in, import a list, and then we'd upsell them. And we'd say, hey, do you want to discover the rest for $50? And when you click the button that said yes, it actually didn't do anything. It was like a smoke screen, but it would send Dan and me an email letting us know that other people found value in it as well.
That's awesome. How did you think about how to do it like that? I mean, it just seems so logical to go that route. But I mean, how often do you hear this?
Well, so you hear it more now, a bit more. I mean, so you hear it, you don't really see it, I should say. A lot of people talk about it, not a lot of people do it. A lot of this sort of thought process comes out of like the Lean Startup methodology. A guy named Eric Ries, who was a co-founder of a company called...
You're like name dropping all the people I'm like in love with. Like, I love what the guys over at Kissmetrics are doing. Eric Ries, his blog is fantastic. I hope one day to get a chance to chat with him on the show, but...
He's great. I can do an introduction.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
We're actually, Dan and I are giving a talk at Berkeley in his class at the end of this month, I believe.
That's awesome. On
the 23rd. So, but anyway, I should say that Dan had a lot to do with it. He's always been on my ass. So Dan's also a few years older than me. He's a little bit more tenured. He's, you know, had a successful exit in his last company. I'm very fresh and very green in a lot of regard. I mean, I'm a hustler and I'm ambitious and I'll do whatever it takes. But with Dan pushing me and sort of holding my feet to the fire every single day, that's really helped me be able to make those decisions and say, okay, we're going to create a product that doesn't do anything just to test if there's interest, because I don't want to spend the dev cycles and time to build something that no one's going to use because our last product we got burned on.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And it's sad, but it almost takes, you know, my dad says the first loss is the best loss. And it's kind of true, because it almost took us to have that loss of that first product for me to learn that lesson to not repeat it. And I may repeat it again. We may repeat it with features in Flowtown. It's going to be sad when we do, but I definitely try to check myself now a lot more. And Dan checks me as well. So, you know, that's kind of why we went down that approach.
So you met Dan how far after? What part of 08 did you meet Dan?
I met Dan in September or October 08.
And you met him on Twitter?
Met him on Twitter.
How did you meet him on Twitter? Did he follow you? Did you follow him? Did somebody reply to him?
Mutual friend was like, at Dan Martel, you need to meet at eBlock. You both just moved to San Francisco. And then we met.
And so what, you had some coffee and everything else is history?
Yeah, we actually got a drink with another friend of ours, Rachel Joy. I think that's her last name, who's now out of New York and does a show, a video show. He wanted me to – he knew I was in video. So Dan's this connector guy. He's the Uber connector, knows like everyone. He wanted me to actually meet with Rachel to give her my input on doing a video show, because at the time I was doing my Revision 3 show. And so we all – three of us went out and got drinks, and that's the first night I met Dan. This is back in the days when Dan wore a suit, because he's Canadian, and he didn't know, like, in the tech scene here, you don't need to get super dressed up. And he would just bust a suit everywhere. It was awesome.
That is cool.
So that's how we met. And then after that, I think we went to an SF New Tech event. And it was like the SF New Tech event. We really like meshed hard and we talked for a while. And I think we even got dinner afterwards. And that's where sort of the bromance started.
I like the usage of that word, the romance. So tell me about the romance of you and Dan early on.
It's the bromance.
Well, I mean, I don't mean – let me get to the backstory, because I was at a conference back in October, and that's a critical part of my life. Last October, I was at a conference called Less Confidence. It's an awesome conference.
Oh, totally.
They have one.
I know it. Totally.
2010. If you're not going to be there, you're not square or whatever. But you should be there. I think it's May 22nd, something like that. It's in May. But anyways, when I was there, I caught Kevin Hale from WooFoo, which he's become, you know, a lot more popular since then. I mean, he was always popular anyways, but his company WooFoo came out of the Y Combinator space.
Yeah, they're doing awesome too.
It did. They were kind of like you guys, you know, they had some early seed stage funding, very small, but they bootstrapped themselves to the company they are today with no VC funding at all. But his talk there was about founders and the – well, his talk wasn't about founders. His talk was about the user and the application, how it's a relationship. But a lot of that gets extracted into Mike McDermott's talk there as well, about how Founders kind of like the early part of it is a romance. So your tie into that word romance kind of made me want to talk to you more about the romantic part of your relationship starting.
Yeah.
In a good sense, a good romantic part, like from a founder standpoint.
No, for sure, for sure. I mean, I think there was instant respect and instant trust in a lot of ways. And we talked a lot about sort of our past and stuff we had done and talked about how we approach sort of life and our temperament and how we approach problems. And it just was a lot of we shared a lot of the same beliefs. And in the same regard, we look at a lot of things differently, which helps a lot, you know. It's hard to explain. It was just a mesh. It was just a very awesome connection.
Was it like one of those situations where you were like, man, I feel like I've known this guy forever and I'm just kind of telling him what he already knows about me?
It wasn't a total, like, I feel like I've known him forever. It was more like I trust this person with everything very quickly, and I'm not actually a very trusting person. So it's a big step for me. I don't know. You should ask Dan as well how he would describe it. We just became like really good friends and brothers from very early on. It's this playful, like we get angry at each other and we tell each other, you know, to F off, and it's all in good spirit. Like that's the relationship we have.
Like brothers.
Yep.
That's awesome. I think people discovering and understanding the early parts of finding a company, just in general, two people creating that relationship to have the ability to create a company like Flowtown is critical understanding, because you can, like you said, it's almost like building a product that will never sell. If you have a founder or a co-partner or whatever you want to call that person in a new company or a new venture, if you go down the road 6 months or a year and build a product that nobody's going to buy or something you don't want to be a part of anymore, that's a big freaking waste of time.
Huge.
You know, and
it's huge.
There's choices you can make early on in the founding stages that are critical. Yep. Things people should just know.
And if you're going to have a co-founder, and usually a lot of successful companies are co-founded, there's not one founder. There are examples like Mint.com, Aaron Patzer, but he's just a freaking machine.
Yeah.
It's amazing to have a co-founder, and you really need, you'll know in your gut if this is the right person. I've found other businesses before with a co-founder, and I knew deep down inside this was not the right person. And I was like, no, push that away, you know, push it out of sight. There's never been a split second I ever doubted that Dan and I were, this wasn't what we were going to do. It just was.
So let's go deeper back in your past. Let's go back before 08. Let's go back to when you were 13. What happened when you were 13?
So when I was 13, I spent a lot of time in IRC, specifically in chat rooms that were sort of around gaming, specifically like Dreamcast. Well, Dreamcast was coming out, that it was $99.99, right? So it was right around the launch of Dreamcast, and there's a lot of PlayStation talk, you know, some Whereas as well included in that. And I found a connection on IRC to buy PlayStation and Dreamcast accessories from China for cheap, like real cheap. I ended up finding out later they were knockoffs, but I had no idea. I mean, I was 13. I was naive. I had some bar mitzvah money. I was ready to get started. So I placed an order for like, I'll never forget the day I picked this thing up at the post office. This is busted up box that's like 3x3, I think was the dimensions. And it was filled with all this gear. And I pick it up and I take it home, and I have all these accessories, controllers, like the VCD adapter for PlayStation so you can play videos on it. And I built a website to sell this stuff because I had all this gear. And then I had a website and I had no customers. So I was like, crap. And I was like, wait a minute. I spent all this time in IRC. People are talking about it. How do I get them to come to my site? I was like, well, I'll write a script and use these other tools that were out there. I'd basically direct market my website and products in IRC chat rooms. So every morning I would open up like 50 chat rooms and just run my scripts, and it would do like a drip ad per hour or so. And usually the ads are pretty relevant, and I only got, banned maybe from a few rooms. And for the most part, people thought there was value in them, and it drove a good deal of traffic. We ended up doing, 13 or 14,000 in business in 6 months or so. And at that point I was actually going to high school. And so I wound down the business and collected my profits, and that really left a lasting impression on me in terms of what can be done with the internet in regards to marketing yourself, your content, your brand, your product. It just blew me away.
Wow, that's crazy. So the reason why I thought that story was really relevant was because, you know, earlier in the podcast, you'd said you're a hustler. You know, you got to drive. You're not going to stop. And I think, you know, when you zoom out, you look at what you've done with Flowtown and where you're at now, and you take an even further zoom out back to, you know, the age of 13, and you look what you did there. That's just amazing to, like, have that kind of drive at the age of 13. Like, I don't remember having that kind of drive at the age of – I was always sure I was going to do something, but not quite that determined like you were.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I grew up in sort of an entrepreneurial household. I mean, my dad's a Russian immigrant, moved here in 73, came with like a pair of shoes, not much else, worked at a lumber yard, ended up building what became one of the largest secondhand clothing distributors in the world from nothing. And so when I was young, I would go to meetings with him, and I loved that shit. And I always just – I was like, if my dad can come to this country and do that, then I have to do this. I have to do, you know what I mean? If he had no opportunity and he's done so much with so little and I have so much, I have to do so much. And I just, I don't know, even when I was 13, that's kind of what I used to put through my head.
That reminds me of something I heard from Brian Tracy. If you know, if you ever listened to any sales CDs.
I'm familiar with Brian Tracy. Sure. Yep.
So if you know Brian Tracy from the sales discs and stuff like that, then it reflects back in your story when you said your dad came into the country with nothing. Well, in Brian Tracy's eyes, and if I recall what this book is called, before this podcast goes out, I'll make sure it's in the show notes. But in this audio book that is from Brian Tracy, he says that that somebody came into this country with nothing, and, you know, in terms of border control and everybody else, he had nothing. Well, what he actually had was, you know, IP. He had intellectual property in his brain. Guy was super smart. He came here and built an electronics business. But, you know, you can come into this country with nothing, but what you have in your brain and what you actually can do with your drive and the person you are, it can do a lot for you.
Totally.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Flowtown. Like, where did the idea of Flowtown come from? Like, to do all that you're doing, it was an iterative process, or did you have sort of this? I know you said you kind of stumbled into certain areas of it, but, you know, the overall vision of Flowtown, where did it come from, and why did Dan even get excited about it?
I mean, it really just came from understanding that businesses were struggling when it came to marketing on the internet. Dan seen it. I mean, he's from a small town in Canada, from in the province of New Brunswick, Moncton. I mean, the entire province is 700,000 people. And he saw it with a lot of the businesses there. And then he came to the Valley, and he's working with startups and advising them. And he's seeing similar problems that they were having. And it came down to figuring out what those were and how we could build a product to help it. I mean, you have also a company like HubSpot, which is doing some amazing things around what we sort of call like traffic and conversion, and now they're starting to get into follow-up. So if you boil down all internet marketing, you really have three main things you need to tackle, which are generating traffic, converting the traffic, and following up with the traffic. And so we learned that pretty quick. And then we thought within those, you know, segments, what are like the problems people are having, you know, what are the troubles they have generating traffic? What are the troubles they have when it comes to converting it? And what are the troubles they have when they try to follow up with it? So Flowtown itself really fits in that third piece, the follow-up piece. We help you today and into the future engage in a richer, more sort of relevant fashion with all of your customers and leads and prospects at scale. And then in the future, we'll help you even recognize who could be an ideal customer based on the signature of your past customers.
And so what kind of cool things are you doing with Flowtown in terms of like being able to follow up and engage and learn more about and discover these?
Yeah, I mean, the product, again, is still really young today. So we do some sort of surface on the surface cool things. We don't do anything really deep that's cool. I mean, we're actually investing in that right now and doing some stuff around that. And so that sort of falls in the area of, okay, I know who this person is, name, age, location, gender. I know that they're on Twitter and Facebook. What are they interested in? You know, so then we can go and look at their social stream, do some crunching there and apply contextual interest to that person. So we know they're interested in sports and entertainment and technology. And then we invest a little bit more in that and push that envelope. And then we, instead of having these broad 10 tags, you know, not only do we know they're interested in technology, they're interested in Apple and the iPad, and not only interested in sports, but they like American football and they're interested in the Steelers or the Ravens. And so as you get more and more granular, And you do this at scale across all your customers. When you go and you go to engage with them, or you go to send a marketing message or something like that, you can get that much more relevant, which in turn drives that many more conversions, or just boosts your conversion percentage, because it's so much more personal.
I prefer the more personal marketing myself. Sometimes I feel like, man, how did you know that about me? So it's a little scary. And I think that's the scary part from an outsider's perspective on this product. But from the insider's perspective on actually pursuing customers, of course, it's I used it myself with this podcast to do some research on you and some other people. I got some decent data back, but in my case, there was one thing with the cloud thing. And if you can, maybe talk against what cloud is. You haven't mentioned it, but I'm going to mention it for you.
Yeah, so Clout is a startup based here in San Francisco. They're pretty close to actually where we are. Joe Fernandez is a founder and CEO. And what they've done is develop, in our opinion, the best influence score around Twitter that's on the internet today. And there are a couple other people that are doing this, but I think just Joe's approach and sort of the resources and the people they had working on it. And they also have a really good relationship with Twitter, which helps. They have applied a scoring system to everyone on Twitter from 0 to 100. Obviously, 0 being the lowest and 100 being the highest. And so, yeah, and so we integrate with Clout. And if a customer brings an email address in Flowtown, we know that person's on Twitter. If they are on Twitter, we then pull a Clout score. We say, okay, they're on Twitter and they're a 30 or a 33 or an 80.
And so how do you use that in your system?
In our system, you can just sort. You know, you import contacts. You can then sort by Clout score. So you very easily know who's influential. Another thing we do is you import your contacts. We're going to create a influencer smart list, very much like iTunes. You can create your different playlists that are the smart playlists.
Very cool.
So you import 10,000 people. We're going to show you your top 50 most influential people of that list. So instantly you can go and see who they are. And if you want, go out to Twitter and start engaging with them. I mean, these are the 20% or 10% or 5% of people that are going to really move the needle for you.
So this, for the person who is, for your users, I guess, what does this cost the user then to tap into these kind of tools?
So today it costs 5 cents per contact imported into Flowtown. And that's a one-time fee for us to run our discovery engine and pull in all the data that we pull. And then if you want to send email from Flowtown, it starts at $15 a month, depending on how much you want to send. It goes all the way up to $200.
And I guess to do the email part of it, are you sending the email yourself? Are you leveraging like a third party like MailChimp or what's the other well-known one, Campaign Monitor?
So we actually do an integration with MailChimp, not a sending integration, but if you're a MailChimp customer, you can come to Flowtown and pull in your MailChimp subscriber list and then push all the rich data back into MailChimp so you can then segment using MailChimp's platform. If you're going to send email from Flowtown, we work with a company called SendGrid, actually, which is an amazing SMTP API that really solves and just has an outrageously amazing system that delivers email. That's what they do. And so we integrate. We don't do the heavy lifting on the email stuff today.
So why would you, just curious, why would you integrate with them or something like that versus creating a partnership with someone like MailChimp or Campaign Monitor?
It'd be too expensive. I mean, to have MailChimp or Campaign Monitor send our email, the cost won't make sense.
I guess the reason why I don't know the numbers behind it, but why I would see it making sense is just because they've got such an awesome base already, a customer base, and they've got great tools to proof your email sending, so it makes the user experience of actually sending the mail itself very good.
Totally. So we're very the Flowtown email product is no bells and whistles. It's dead simple, really what you see is what you get. And that's just the way it is today because our core competency is not going to be around being an ESP. And it's not a market we're really interested in playing in. There's some great companies in there that we're partnered with, like a MailChimp, even like Campaign Monitor, that do it really well. And, you know, that's why integrating for us makes sense, because if you're a Campaign Monitor user, you love Campaign Monitor. So if you want Flowtown, we'll just be an email, we'll be an ornament on their tree in a sense.
So, but I guess since you do share that data back with, you could push that data back into MailChimp. You're
exactly,
not tied
exactly
into using Flowtown. You're just... So what is that process like then to select that data back and forth, to synchronize that data? What's the process like?
It's just three clicks. You come into Flowtown, you sign up. After that, you click import contacts. You select MailChimp. You type in your MailChimp login and pass or your API key. You click connect. You select a subscriber list you want. You click process, and it pulls it in, runs the discovery, and then pushes age group, gender, location, and social network information back to every single contact as merge fields and interest groups.
And so then you go back into MailChimp. You do your list segmenting and saying, well, I only want to target users between the age of 25 and 30, if those metrics are available, who have a Twitter account. And you could do that.
Exactly.
Wow. So if I have, let's say I have a list of 20,000 people in MailChimp, it's going to cost me 5 cents per person to suck it into Flowtown, process it, and push
again,
it back.
Five cents a contact to process it.
That's like dirt cheap, man.
It's dirt cheap.
If you can use all that data, like if you don't have that data and you're not getting that from your CMS, your subscribe forms, or your salespeople aren't doing a good job of asking those questions. It's like I've worked with plenty of companies, and I would say, you know, when you're capturing this data, ask these questions so you could put it in there. So when we do the segmenting, we could do it right, and we're not blasting spam to customers who are never going to buy. You're just wasting your time, and they don't do it. So you can't rely on a person to do that, but you can rely on Flowtown to deliver. And so we've talked about the discovery part of it. So what kind of information can you share around the technology of actually this discovery process of taking the email and discovering all this stuff about these people?
So it's all public data that you share on the social web. So if you're on Twitter, right, it's all public. If you're on Facebook, depending on your settings, it's all public. We do a lot of the same stuff. Like if you go to Google right now and you just type in your first and last name, Google's going to pull a ton of information about you if you're a social person on the social web. So the same stuff Google accesses, we access. And it's that same sort of synthesis. Like we're not pulling in data from like a TransUnion or an Equifax, and we know like, you know, how many kids you have and how much you make per year and things like that. It's pretty basic. And again, you as a user have control of what we know. So it's, again, this is pulling in data from the social networks themselves through their APIs, through crawling, through partnerships with other data providers. And that's really how the discovery engine works.
Well, not only that, but today Google also announced Webfinger.
Yep.
Which is personal web discovery just through an email address. And they shoot you back various types of data or various formats of that data. And there's actually been quite a few things happening. Actually, if you go over to the changelog.com right now, you can discover a couple wrappers that have recently been written, one for Ruby, one for Python. But Wynn and I were actually looking for one called Goldfinger.
Goldfinger.
Yeah, because you got Redfinger for Ruby, and you've got Snakefinger, I think, for Python. And we're looking for Goldfinger.
It's awesome.
But, okay, so you've got this email address. You plug it out there. You pull back all this data. It's all public data. So you're not doing anything mischievous to get this data. You're not twisting somebody's arm. You're not going through any sort of back channels. You're going through just social graph information.
Yep.
What is Flowtown built upon? Is it Ruby on Rails? Is it a Rails stack? Or?
Yep. It's all so the app is Ruby on Rails, the whole thing. We have some JavaScript, which is jQuery. And it's a simple stack. MySQL's our database. We actually use CouchDB for a couple of things that we do in terms of the data we get back from some of our data providers. It's pretty simple today.
Okay. So a little bit of a mixture of MySQL and leaving schemaless database like CouchDB. What is that? Do you have any details about Couch at all? Where you're using it and how you're using it?
Yeah, so we use it right now. When we query some of our data providers, they just spit back a crap ton of XML. And so when we get it back, we just throw that whole thing into Couch. And then we have a lot of background processes that run during the discovery aspect, and they'll go and actually sift through Couch.
Cool. Let's see. Where can we go next? I think we're probably getting to the point where I've touched on a lot of the things I want to touch on. Is there anything that's key that we've missed?
What's the typical audience going to be around? Are they more interested in like the story and the technology and what's going on?
Yeah, it's kind of a mixture there. Like I think that's why I asked you some of the questions I did, because I know you have a very diverse background getting to where you're at now, and that's sort of like the fun, the sizzle of the story, right? You have this
totally
very fun backstory. You sort of stumbled into it, even though you're totally justified being where you're at, you know. But you know, sometimes just following your gut.
Mm-hmm.
Like you had said, with going to South by in 08 and where that got you today and the connections you made from it, I share, you know, some of those same or very, very similar kind of experiences with going to Future Web Apps in 2008. I met Gary there. Gary Vaynerchuk. Now, we didn't get deep advice on where we're going with this, with the podcast and our business and stuff, but I got to make some really good connections there that just helped me propel into the next phases and the next stages of my career and my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I still look back on those moments as like the beginning, you know, like you probably look back on South By as like the beginning for you.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, not so much, you know, where you started, but kind of where the last 2 years have been. That was the beginning of this roller coaster from since then. That was like the uphill, and you've just been coasting since then on this steam that's been created from that moment.
Yeah, I wouldn't say coasting.
Well,
every day is a struggle, but yeah.
Coast maybe was a bad word, but I guess you get the gist of what I was trying to say there.
Yep.
So what kind of advice could you give to an entrepreneur that say has similar shoes to you? What kind of advice can you give entrepreneurs today that are just struggling with starting their company, finding a founder, deciding on direction of their product? What kind of advice can you give in that regard?
Yeah. One thing is find someone you really want to work with. Find a great co-founder. It makes everything so much easier. You share the burden, the pain, the pleasure, the happy, the sad, the exclamation points, the question marks. That's, in my opinion, one of the most critical things in a lot of cases is just find someone you can work with that you both add, you know, and bring tremendous value to the table. So that's number one, probably. Number two would be to just keep building stuff, keep iterating, keep founding new businesses until, you know, don't get all crazy ADD and have 50 projects at once, because that's hard. I don't think that'll work. But you know, if it's not this project that you're working on, it'll be the next one. And know when it's time to give up on the one you're currently working on. Know, you know, there's quitters who quit because they just don't have it in them. And then there's quitters who do the smart quitting that know that what they're working on, it's time to say goodbye. And you have to know that's a very like distinct, but it's a small distinction, but it's game changing. So keep building shit, you know, great co-founder, keep building shit. And if you really want it to happen, just keep pushing, like hustle. These are my tenets, right? This is how I live every day. So I
eat this stuff. At a conference and you meet somebody that can help you get to the next step, don't shy away and go into the corner. Go over there and put whatever you have in their face and say, help me.
Yep. Right? I wouldn't say help me. I mean, I guess I kind of did that to Damon Berger. I didn't just say, hey, help me. I said, hey, check this show out, right? You need this at Revision 3. If you're constantly asking, you know, if you're constantly asking people for help, that's actually a major turnoff. It's a lot better. Like Dan said it great. When he first moved to San Francisco, he went to TC50. And this was in, again, winter 08, around September, October. And he went up to Chris Sacca, who's pretty well known. And he said to him, I just moved here. What advice can you give me about getting into the community? And Chris said to him, meet a lot of people and add value to every single person you meet. Just add value. Don't worry about what you're going to get back. Just add value. And Dan went on this adding value streak for like 13, 14 months. And he met so many people and became friends with so many awesome individuals because of it, that at Flowtown, we've been able to move so much faster in different stages we've been in due to that. I mean, that was tremendous. So, you know, if you're at a conference and you really want to meet someone and you know you're going to meet them, figure out a way you can add some value to their life. That's tremendous. And in the same respect, you know, clearly they could and will do something for you down the road or even more immediate.
That's so true, man, the adding value piece. I think that's kind of been – it's kind of been where I was – where I've been at. I've been – every connection I make, every person I touch on Twitter, in the social graph, pretty much anywhere, if I can just somehow help them. And you say – you use the word add value. I say help them. It's the same thing though.
Yep.
If I can help you connect with somebody or make a connection to go to the next step that you're trying to get to or somehow get over a hump or answer a question or just be a sounding board or just help you continue to push and drive like you just said, you know, keep that drive and not let you say, well, I'm not getting anywhere. I'll quit.
Yep.
If I can do that for, you know, people, that's kind of the trick I've been on, which is – It's just kind of wild to hear you say that. I'm like taking your advice. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's amazing too. It feels so good to add value to other people. I don't know. If it's philosophical, if it's spiritual, if it, whatever the heck it is, it just is, it makes life better. Really?
Well, there's a little phrase, a little segment of Wedding Crashers I'm going to pull out. Mm-hmm. And it said a very pivotal moment in the movie too. They're there at the dinner table, and his girl is doing something provocative to him underneath the table, and they're trying to answer some questions, and he's like, you know, holy shirts and pants, and it's that part, if you've seen the movie. And then he just says, you know, people helping people. And it's a funny movie. It's a comedic movie, but that phrase has stuck with me because I've always been of the mindset that if just more people helped other people in this world, it would just be so much better.
Yep.
You know, just people helping people. That's all it is. You know, don't thank you for thanking me for helping you, but honestly, it's just people helping people, man.
People helping people.
If you take this and go help somebody else, that's great. Do it.
That's it.
So what's on the radar? What's on the radar for Flowtown? Where are you guys – what's on the next horizon that's just super secret that no one else knows and you want to announce right now on the Web 2.0 show?
We're hiring. No, that's a shameless plug. I'm sorry. I think some of that stuff about the contextual interests we actually haven't told anyone. So I would say in the very near future on Flowtown, when you view the social profile, today you really see who they are and where they are. And by who they are, I mean like, you know, name, age, location, gender. What you're going to see soon is actually what they're interested in. And it's going to start with those high-level tags that I mentioned, and it's going to get even deeper. And we haven't told anyone about that yet at all. And that's coming very soon.
Very cool. But you're hiring. That's a good thing too.
We're hiring.
And so that Great. Means if you're a Rails developer out there or you're in the NoSQL era of, you know, whether it's Couch or something else, if you have skills in that area, give you a phone call, yeah. Give you a shout.
If you're a Rails guy, hit us up. jobs@flowtown.com. That actually comes directly to me. So
awesome.
jobs@flowtown.com. Send us, I mean, resumes don't really matter. Send us what you worked on, open source projects you've been a part of, other side projects you've done.
Is there bonus points for people who say, hey, heard about you on the Web 2.0 show. I'm looking for some work in the Rails kind of arena.
Yeah, if we hire someone because of the Web 2.0 show, I'm going to send you an iPad.
Awesome.
How about that?
If you send me an iPad, I'm going to give it to a listener. I can't accept it.
All right, then you can't accept it. So we'll give the Web 2.0 show an iPad to give to a listener.
Awesome. Cool. We'll find out some way we can do something fun to give you exposure and a listener a fun day.
That'd be awesome.
Cool.
Love it. Love it.
Awesome. Well, you know, Ethan, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. You know, your past and where you're going is I'm astounded to even have a chance to talk with you. I think it's great. Some of the names you dropped today, I didn't even expect them, but definitely a fan of a lot of the people you've worked with and definitely a fan of where Flowtown is going, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Adam, I really appreciate you having me. And again, it's been a pleasure on my end as well, and I love what you're doing with the show and across the board, and let's definitely stay in touch, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Web 2.0 show. Be sure to check out web20show.com for links in the show notes or to leave a comment on the show. Thanks for listening.